Now, since we're on the topic of Emissaries, your new album, why don't we talk a little bit more about the music that's on there? It's a double CD, and one's a studio album, and one is a live album. Why don't you elaborate on the details?
Well, I think people that have heard us before will recognize more of what they know of us in the live side, paradoxically. We seem to have done rather a lot of live work one way or another. And in fact, the recording of the main Emissaries disc, the studio part, represented something of a departure from our normal way of recording, in that we had the inspiration up front of the artwork. From very early on, we had black and white drawings, and then the color version arrived later, and so we were working to almost to a brief. The images were already there, rather than coming after the music had been recorded. So that was different for us. There were other sort of fairly obvious constraints: the fact that there are several sort of sections to the story that we needed to reflect in the music somehow, without sort of being trite about it and doing a piece for each picture. We had to sort of carry the story through its various stages musically. So we were aware that we'd need a suite of pieces rather than a continuous piece of music. And that led us to approach it over several sessions. And there was a lot of to-ing and fro-ing of CDs while we tried out different ideas of mixing and different edits. It taught us a great deal about version control, but then, you know, we've always operated like that in this band. All of the post-production is a collaborative and democratic process, and we manage somehow by posting CDs to each other and staying in touch with emails and so forth.
Well, one album was actually recorded live on Star's End, and that was back in May of 2004.
That's so right. That was the right after we did the concert in the church. We met Steve Fegenbaum from Cuneiform outside. He'd come along to meet Steve to thank him for some help with another Cuneiform release. I'm not sure of the details, but that was, basically it was a social visit. And after the concert, Steve was so sort of taken with our music that he decided to offer us a chance of some exposure in the States on a sort of more formal basis than previously.
Well, that's definitely a very good label to be associated with. I've known Steve for a long time.
It's fantastic. I mean, they have a significant presence over here, because it's very often the only way that people can now get copies of some of the material he releases.
Yeah. Well, why don't we talk a little bit about that concert, the concerts that you've done here, and, well, just in general, your experience in the live venue, because you are a group who does play out live quite a bit, and you use that medium to produce some of your, or most all of your albums. It's a lot different than recording something in a studio where there's no one else around.
The way this band has worked has always been an improvisational approach to rather than writing and arranging and orchestrating things in advance and then sort of rehearsing them and playing them. We have a reputation for making things up as we go along, and that's what we've developed over the years. It became apparent very early on in our career that this wasn't going to go over in pubs and clubs and the normal sort of rock and roll gig circuit, particularly in London. And so we started looking for alternative venues to play out and almost to an invited audience or a sort of, you know, a very sort of small area of the rock market. And that led us to art galleries and planetariums and you know, that sort of venue. Something with a much different atmosphere than a bar or a club.
Well, what about how that experience actually influences the compositions that you do? I mean, you probably... I've heard you speak about this before, where certain performances are elicited by an audience, or you somehow connect.
I think by an environment and by an atmosphere, and an audience is very much part of that. But it's part of a much bigger experience. For us as a trio working together, it's not so different than being in the studio. It's just doing it in front of people. And so the presence of the audience is only a small effect on what we actually play. It's we're more concerned with the overall environment, I think. It's difficult to connect with an audience in any live situation. It's difficult to sort of cross that boundary between the stage and the audience. But what we do try to do is provide a strong narrative thread through the music and take the journey, take the audience on the journey that we're going on as musicians.
Your music often is compared to the space music of the 70s, for instance, Klaus Schulze and Tangerine Dreams, some of their earlier works. But actually, your music is much more than just a rehashing of the past, of revisiting this music. It really has more to do with expression that goes beyond just its historical roots.
I think that's one of the things that I'm proudest of in this band, is that we do manage to convey something with every piece of music, whether intentionally or not. There's always a thread running through it and a sort of personality. On a very superficial level, some of the sonic qualities, the use of the sequencers and the synthesizers and the mellotron sounds, have a superficial resemblance to music that's gone before, and obviously we've been influenced by that, but as a vocabulary, not as a musical form. It's a sort of palette of sounds that we've adopted, but we do depart from it, and we do have the bass, drums, guitar background as well.
Well, I wanted you also to speak a bit about some of the music that Stars and listeners might not be that familiar with, because you actually have quite a huge library of albums that you've released and styles of concerts that you've done. Can you talk a little bit about some of the music that you do outside of this the sequencer space music that I play on my show?
I think it's 25 albums now.
Wow.
Well, the three of us really started off playing in a more traditional sort of rock style. We actually played together first in a kind of Hawkwind tribute band while we were at college. We were still 15, 16 at the time. And the electronic music really grew out of the sort of turbulent periods that this band was going through, and periods of inactivity, and the three of us would get together at one of our bedrooms with a synth and a guitar and write this alternative stuff. Practical constraints, really. We couldn't set up a drum kit anywhere unless we booked a sort of rehearsal room. We didn't have that much money and so on and so forth, and one thing led to another, and this became the main forum for our musical work until much later on. Steve had a long spell of playing drums in various bands. Gary is still playing out with a sort of rhythm and blues outfit, doing sort of Rory Gallagher, Stevie Ray Vaughan kind of bluesy guitar playing. And I've had spells playing bass in bands as well. So we've always had this sort of parallel careers in music.
Well, getting back to the kind of music that we hear on Star's End, having listened to your music for so long, and I'm pretty familiar with at least this aspect of it, the kind that I play on the show, or the style that I play on the show, much of it is it really evokes a vast cosmic and ethereal sense or feeling. And does any of that relate to your own spirituality? I know it's kind of hard to speak about this, and at least we've done this at the pub over a few pints, I guess.
Yeah, we're very fortunate to have struck upon a mode of expression that suits all of us so well. And I think it dates back to us being teenagers in the same area of the world and sort of growing up in the same sort of surroundings. And a typical night out would be, you know, go for a few beers and then go down to the beach and look at the stars. And really our appreciation of being a very small thing in the universe came from something as basic as that, just sort of looking at the stars and over the sea. And listening to the noise of the sea at night when you're going to sleep, it's taken off from there, I think.
Right. Well, getting down to a more basic question, I was trying to remember the other day how you got the name RMI, and I couldn't remember. I used to know. Could you explain it again?
It came from Steve's imagination. We'd been working in the bedroom studio for a few years, I think 3 or 4 years, and gradually other people had sort of caught on to what we were doing and the fact that they could come and record these songs on very, very basic equipment, very rudimentary equipment. And this brought constraints. First of all, we were working with other people outside of the sort of core trio that's now RMI. The technical constraints and the constraints of working with other musicians meant that there was a very rigorous approach to the recording back then. And just occasionally, the three of us would need to escape from this somehow and really go back to just a pure expression with no sort of prearrangement, no rehearsal, and no technical constraints. Just literally plug a guitar and a keyboard into one tape recorder and see what we come up with. And it was during one of these sessions, born out of a frustration with having to write, rehearse, record, you know, songs in a traditional way. During one of these sessions that Gary and Steve were playing together, Steve just christened one of these pieces Radio Massacre International, and we much later on decided to adopt the name for the band.
I see. Well, certainly no one will mistake you for a new age group with that name. I think that probably helps.
I think so. Yes, it's not done us any harm.
You know, also another question I had about names was, how do you come up with the titles for your pieces? I think you create the pieces and then you name them or someone else names them.
Mostly it's that way around. Mostly they suggest things and somebody will say it out loud and really we've all been thinking the same thing.
Well, is there someone outside the group that helps you name them as well?
The live albums, yes. That started off as a joke, really. And then I go back to the same friend of mine for titles for the live albums. That's just one of those things.
Well, he's come up with some pretty imaginative titles.
Yeah, it's a variety of sources. Sometimes the title comes first, but more often it's something that's suggested afterwards. And the other two will go, oh, yeah, that's right, that fits.